House builder, you are seen. You will not build a house again. All the rafters are broken, the ridge pole destroyed. The mind, gone to the unconstructed, has reached the end of craving. Words attributed to the historical Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama. As written in the Dhammapada, his collected sayings. I was reminded of these words while recently listening to a May 27, 2026 Tricycle Magazine podcast of editor James Shaheen interviewing writer, filmmaker, and Zen priest Ruth Ozeki. At one point in the interview, Ruth was trying to describe the process of writing fiction, as well as the process of reading stories. She said, "When we read a story, we bring our lives to bear on it and make it ours, no matter what the writer might have intended. Stories are like that. They are collaborations between people who read and people who type. They are how we co-create each other and dream ourselves into being." How do we co-create each other? And as Ruth says, dream ourselves into being. How might this co-creation of self-experience, using the Buddha's metaphor, be like the construction of a house? Why would the Buddha emphasize deconstruction as so important to ending dukkha, the pervasive existential unsatisfactoriness of craving for life to be different from however it is at this moment? In what way is such deconstruction also relational and collaborative in Zen and other Buddhist practice? And what are the consequences of this for both equanimity in everyday experience and for harmonious interaction with other beings? These are questions I wish to consider with you this morning. The historical Buddha's teaching, according to the Pali Suttas, was pragmatic, primarily concerned with practices, including forms of meditation, for awakening and liberation from existential unsatisfactoriness. These teachings were not concerned with ontologic metaphysical arguments. They did, however, address questions and beliefs common in the Buddhist time and place, as in ours, that create confusion and contribute to dukkha, to existential unsatisfactoriness. The Buddha's search for liberation from dukkha began in his young adulthood, with awareness of the unavoidability of aging, sickness, and death. This great matter of life and death, as it is often called, is central to all traditions of Buddhism. At the close of these Saturday morning Sangha meetings, we acknowledge this in the Zen Night Gatha that I or another teacher chants. May I respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Time passes swiftly and opportunity is lost. Let us awaken. Awaken. Take heed. Do not squander your life. Prominent in the Night Gatha is recognition of the reality of impermanence. Buddhism's three marks of existence, or characteristics of all experience, are impermanence, anicca in Pali, unsatisfactoriness, dukkha, and non-self, anatta. According to Buddhist tradition, deeply realizing, making real the three marks of existence, not merely intellectually, but in a fully embodied and enacted way, can bring an end to dukkha. The third mark of existence, anatta or non-self, can often seem confusing for many who begin Buddhist practice. In our common sense view, the self is typically thought of as a given, unique, integrated, cohesive, agentic, and independent source of permanence underlying the conscious flow of experience. Unpacking what I just said, our view prior to practice is that what we call self is given, taken for granted as just what is. It is also unique. No two selves, not even identical twins, being the same. Integrated, with all aspects related as oneself. Cohesive, with all aspects inextricably fitting together. Agentic, or expressing volition. And independent, or causally separate from other selves. These assumed characteristics of self are further taken to be the source of a sense of permanence and continuity in the flow of all experience. That is, even though we can look at photographs of when we were a child, or even a decade ago if we are an older adult, and be aware that we don't have physical continuity throughout a lifespan, our experience is that of somehow being the same self experiencing all that enters awareness. There are relatively rare exceptions involving the experience of some persons regarding one or more of those characteristics I just described as comprising a common sense view of self. However, these are typically taken as reflecting a pathological condition, or the reversible effect of ingesting some chemical. As many of you know, there are conceptual frameworks that have attempted to explain several of these characteristics of self. In a framework called dualism, some philosophical and many contemporary religious traditions suppose that we possess both bodies and souls, and that souls are the unchanging essence of self. For the historical Buddha, there was no such duality. The self being constructed from lived, embodied experience. Anatta, or non-self, can be directly experienced by Buddhist practitioners and is central to Buddhist teaching. No self exists in the sense of a permanent, eternal, integral, and independent substance within an individual. Rather, the self is experienced to be conditional, transitory, and changeable, constructed from the five so-called aggregates. These five aggregates, Skandhas or heaps are corporeality or form, sensation, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. Sanbo Zen teacher and author David Loy, in his 2008 book, Money, Sex, War, Karma, Notes for a Buddhist Revolution, describes it in this way. My sense of self is composed of mostly habitual ways of perceiving, feeling, thinking, and acting. If you strip away those psychological and physical processes, what's left? Nothing. My nothingness means my constructed sense of self is ungrounded, so it is haunted by a basic sense of unreality and insecurity. Notice David Loy's choice of the word nothingness, no thingness, and his description of habitual processes, actions of perceiving, feeling, thinking and acting. No nouns, all verbs. French-born molecular geneticist turned Tibetan Buddhist monk, Matthieu Ricard, in his 2003 book, Happiness, writes in a similar vein that as we begin to feel that this self is highly vulnerable, and must be protected and satisfied, aversion and attraction soon come into play. Aversion for anything that threatens the self, attraction to all that pleases, comforts it, boosts its confidence, or puts it at ease. Those quotes from Loy and Ricard might suggest that these habitual physical and psychological processes and their consequences for aversion and attraction are all taking place entirely within the confines of a given person's skin. However, it's important to recognize that these processes are interactively collaborative. Those, quote, habitual ways of perceiving, feeling, thinking, and acting are formed throughout life in relationship, from the earliest interaction with a parent through those of communities, schools, cultures, and other social groups, and with all the more than human beings of this living planet. So, if our collaboratively constructed sense of self is unreal, ungrounded, fueling both craving and aversion, how does practice deconstruct this illusory self? The illusory sense of self is deconstructed by experiencing its boundlessness, or interdependence in Zazen, in meditation. In Zazen, we let go of habitual physical and mental activity that distracts us from awareness of this interdependence. Sitting, as David Loy writes, with it and as it. Author Michael Pollan, in his 2026 book, A World Appears, A Journey into Consciousness, illustrates this with a simple experiment that you can do any time you have a few quiet minutes available. He writes, "Close your eyes and search the space of your awareness. Let the flurries of normal waking consciousness settle and accustom yourself to the absence of light. At first, you will see little or nothing in this mental dark. But after a while, a thought will arise in the form of words or images or feelings, and it will appear to come out of nowhere, unbidden. You can search for its source. Did you think it, or is it thinking itself? But all you're apt to find is a chain of associations linking it to other thoughts or feelings or images. This, of course, is the stream of consciousness. But can you find yourself here, either floating in the stream or observing it from the banks? Good luck. In Zazen practice, with steady, mindful awareness of mental activity, there begins a shift in the sense of self. The self is found to be a psychological construction, built of a continuously changing flow of concepts, images, sensations, beliefs, and other aspects of the mental continuum. These aggregates, once thought to comprise a stable self, are eventually seen to be impermanent. Several of you are familiar with how 12th century Japanese Soto Zen founder Dogen describes this in his Genjo Koan fascicle, or actualizing the fundamental point. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things. When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away. No trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. When Dogen writes, "To study the self is to forget the self, and to forget the self is to be actualized by myriad things," he is describing Zazen, releasing conceptual thought and opening awareness to present, here and now experience, the myriad things. Notice how Dogen points out that Zazen's process of deconstructing the self, as with the process of construction, is relationally collaborative. He writes, "When actualized by myriad things, your body and mind, as well as the bodies and minds of others, drop away." What drops away are both the habitual physical and psychological processes by which that sense of myself is constructed, and those same processes by which I construct a sense of others, and they of me, as being separate, independent selves. In the final sentence of this Genjo Koan passage, Dogen helps us to avoid replacing this realization of non-self by other conceptual constructions, such as, "Now I'm awakened. Now I'm an enlightened being." Realization of non-self leaves no such trace, simply continuing endlessly, actualized by myriad things in each new moment. Kazuaki Tanahashi, a leading translator of Dogen's writing, including his Shobogenzo, wherein the Genjo Koan appears, cautions about a common misunderstanding. Kaz writes, "This selflessness is called true self or original face. It is also described as something close or what is intimate. Thus, the teaching of no self is not nihilism, not an assertion that nothing exists. Rather, it is awareness of the interdependence of all things, the reality of things as they are." The sense of self as continuous, separate, and independent is illusory. This illusion is nonetheless useful. It plays an important part in how imagination reconstructs past experience and projects possible future scenarios in which this self might act and make choices. However, with embodied, enacted realization of the impermanent and interdependent nature of self, the choices we make are more likely to be compassionate and beneficial for all beings, human and more than human. Consider how often someone trapped in believing the illusory sense of self to be real makes harmful choices, choosing to dominate and control others by force and fear. Believing this separate, independent self requires protecting, defending, promoting, satisfying, even if at the cost of others' well-being. Consider how we each can, out of strength of past conditioning and present circumstances, forget the reality of impermanence and interdependence, consequently acting in some harmful way. Given how personal experience and culture powerfully reinforce, reward, even valorize the illusory sense of self, such forgetting is to be expected. Yet with practice, we can notice more readily the signals of this forgetting, including the bodily reactivity of attraction or aversion, intentionally pausing while this reactivity is not yet so strong as to hijack decisions and actions. Remembering, then, the reality of true self as impermanent, interdependent process, we can open and broaden awareness to include intentions and vows of kindness and compassion, recalling that we are not separate from others, and that all beings share the wish to be safe, happy, free from suffering and the causes of suffering. This is awakening from the collaboratively constructed illusory dream of being a continuous, separate, independent self. This is literally remembering, re-membering, integrating illusory separation into one being. This is realization, making real of the impermanent, completely interdependent self, all of us truly are. And as Dogen taught, no trace of realization remains, and this no trace continues endlessly. Gassho, now please share your observations and questions.